Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes here on News Talk 580 KMJ. If you listened to last week's program, we might have left you with a little bit of a cliffhanger because we just did not have enough time to get through all of Don Hoff's stories, and I don't think we'll have enough time to get through them today, but I wanted to devote at least part of this program to finishing up with him and hearing in particular about that intense experience that he had at the Battle of Midway. If you didn't hear us before, he talked about the first dive bomb, and he was a radio man and gunner on an SBD. Those were the dive bombing planes, carrier based and later land based. He would fly some off of Henderson Field at Guadalcanal later on in the war. But at that point, he was on the USS Enterprise, and the dive bombers had taken off. You may have heard him describe that first run at the aircraft carrier Kaga and how he decided not to strafe that carrier as they're going by to not give away his position. But that was just the first of what, four carriers that you attacked that day or during that mission?
Right. Well, we got after we attacked the Kaga, and it took us quite a while to get back into where the carrier was, the Enterprise. Then we had approximately five gallons of gas left, and we were the last plane to land from our group. Then we were around there. We got a bite to eat, and then we were standing by and. When they finally went out and they were there from the Hear You, the planes from the Hear You attacked the Yorktown, and they found the Hear You, and they knew where it was. So we went out. It was late, probably 5 o'clock or so in the afternoon, and we lost approximately half of our squadron in the morning, and. There was a lot of other planes that were lost from bombing Squadron 6. Probably two-thirds were lost or more. But there were planes from the carrier Yorktown, and these were bombing 3 SBDs and some bombing 5. So when the carrier Yorktown was attacked, they sent those planes over to the Enterprise, and they said, land over there. So that's what they did. But when they landed, we adopted them right straight into our dive, scouting squadron 6 and bombing squadron 6. We just flat out adopted them. So when we left in the afternoon to go out to finally attack the Hear You, we had a full squadron. We had 2 full squadrons of dive bombers. And so when we arrived out there, the Japanese Combat Air Patrol was up, and they were nasty, and they were ready to fight, and they knew that the 3 carriers we had hit in the morning were beyond repair. They were damaged. They were gone. And so they were going to do everything they possibly could to eliminate us from killing the 4th carrier.
So it's not an exaggeration to say that you were flying into a hornet's nest.
Absolutely. They were really, there was a lot of them. And they were really up and ready to go. And so, and of course, the carrier, by this time, now the carrier, they Hear You, knew we were coming. So the carrier was very evasive with turning and twisting. And we came in out of sun, or up sun. And but the Japanese attacked attacked the bombers before we got there. Personally, I was never attacked. But there were some of the other planes that were. I didn't get a chance to shoot at them because nobody came that close to me, which didn't make me the least bit mad. I wasn't unhappy at all. And we made our attack, and we got a direct hit on her. And we missed in the morning, but we got a direct hit in the afternoon.
What was that like for you as walk us through that process. Obviously, the pilot's at the controls.
The pilot's at the controls, and he's flying the plane straight down at about 250 miles an hour. And I'm in the back seat, riding backwards with my gun, my machine guns out, so in case we're attacked by fighter planes while we're in the dive, I have an opportunity to shoot them to keep them away.
I could keep my eyes open, let alone try to see another plane going by.
But the one job that the rear gunner has to have that he does for the pilot. The pilot is diving. He can't change his eyes. He's got his eyes up at the gun sight, and he can't look down there to watch and see what all the instruments show. I have to read off the elevation starting at 10,000 feet. I call every 1,000 feet, 10, 9, 8, right on down to the line, until I dial, I call 3, at standby, I call, at 3,000 feet, I call standby, and at 2,000 feet, I call mark. And, of course, he's supposed to start pulling out. Well, sometimes he's not in precisely the position he's wanting to be in, but he's going 250 miles an hour. He doesn't have any maneuvering time. He's got to have it squared away by then to where he's aiming to where he thinks the carrier is going to be when his bomb hits the water. And but he wants to get low so he can make sure it gets a good hit. So he may go as low as 1,500 feet. And at 1,500 feet, when he pulls out, he's pulling 6, 7, 8 times the force of gravity in the back seat. He doesn't get that much up in front, but in the back seat, because you're behind the wing, there's more gravity pull than there is up in front. But he pulled out, and he was right flat on the water. The way I always did it, I would count, four, standby, mark, and I'd yell real loud.
Because you don't want to take a chance that he doesn't hear you.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There's noise, there's engine noise, and I wanted to make sure that he heard me. And, of course, if he didn't hear me, if he'd have been shot, he would go straight in. You wouldn't worry about it. You know, I mean, you didn't have any time really to think about it. But we pulled out, and, of course, we headed back toward the carrier because we knew that the damage that we had done to that carrier, we could see the bomb damage. We knew there wasn't any chance of those fighters were going to land on that carrier and they weren't going to come after us anymore. We knew there was a feeling that we have really done our job right because we've got the fourth carrier out of four, so we're home free, so to speak, from the aircraft, the Jap aircraft carriers.
How far away from the carrier were you by the time that bomb exploded, and could you feel the heat from something like that, or you got away quickly enough?
No, we pulled out fast enough and far enough away that we were probably quarter to maybe a third of a mile. By the time we got leveled out right flat down on the water, it might have been about a third of a mile, maybe. Quarter to
you
third.
You mean by the time you reached down and picked your head up from down between your feet and put it back on? That's probably what it felt like,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's quite a feeling because you can't really move, and you're just holding on. It only takes a few seconds to pull out, but it's that really strain that you... You're sitting there, and you really can't move. You're holding on tight. But once we got straightened out, I didn't make any attempts to do any strafing. I didn't feel a need for it, and there were a lot of fighters around. And I know that some of the other guys, I've read our reports, and some of the other guys were hit by three or four fighters, and they had some problems with them. But for some reason or another, they didn't... maybe my guardian angel was batting him away or something or other, but whatever way you want to say it or believe it, we were very fortunate that we were able to get out of there and get back, and it was a really good feeling that night. Till we got back to the carrier and landed, had a steak dinner for us, and then afterward, they took us down to the sick bay, and they gave everybody one big stiff shot of whiskey of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, okay, right straight into bed. And that's exactly what we did. We went into bed because we knew that there were still Japanese ships out there, and we'd still be working the next day. And we were. But it was a good feeling to know that we had taken care of the Japanese airplanes. That there wasn't going to be any more. We did not know, nobody knew, that Yamamoto was coming along with another two smaller carriers behind us, with about, I read different varying reports on how many battleships he had with him. 8, 10, and 11, and 6. I mean, somebody has got some varying information.
Right.
And, but anyway, we didn't even know that he was anywhere around.
But for the time being, that was a huge victory.
Oh, absolutely.
For the U.S.
We knew, when you get 4 carriers in one day, and we had never seen Japanese carriers at that
right.
point. Never seen them. And the Japanese had never really seen a really operational carrier. She'd sure as heck never seen Enterprise people, believe me.
So and she would never forget them.
And she'd know, absolutely.
Sure.
Much to her discern why... I'm sure she wishes that never... Well, of course, Enterprise was... Because Enterprise was scheduled to be in the harbor on December the 7th.
Right.
And they claimed they got her. They got a target ship, which was tied up at our regular dock.
Right.
And
but in their propaganda, they claimed
yeah,
to have...
Yeah, and they claimed
Enterprise.
It. And then, right. of course, then they tried to crash dive her down in the Marshall Islands. And they claimed they got her. Then later on, they claimed that they got her when at Midway. They got the Yorktown. They claimed they got the Enterprise. The Enterprise became number one target of the Japanese Navy. The main, even back in the later on in the kamikaze times, they had carriers all over the place out there, and the main target was Enterprise. Get the Enterprise if you don't get anything else.
And so, she also became the Mark Twain of aircraft carriers because reports of her demise were greatly exaggerated.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, right. And it was really something to to be on it. But the thing is that the fellows were efficient and premium and smooth, and everybody worked together. So, you know, you just a rare sense of pride to know that you're off of Enterprise. And they awarded the... aircraft. Well, they get the flying crosses and.
What did that mean to you? Because you know, I know a lot of guys, and I'll interview them for a couple hours, and they'll never mention anything, and then I'll find out later, or I'll be looking at their wall, like, hey, you got a DFC. You didn't tell me anything about that. That's a pretty big deal. What did that mean to you to have the Distinguished Flying Cross?
Well, it's a real thrill. You feel like you've earned it. You don't want to brag. You don't want to tell about it. You don't feel like you're telling everybody, but hey, I got a DFC. You look forward to getting one, hopefully, and you to some recognition, and give you to raise you to give a rate raising from third class to second class, mm-hmm. and to get a DFC. You feel like, by golly, they really recognize what we do out there. And what we did do, and because that's all voluntary. Now, for the pilot, that's his job. That's what he's trained for. For the gunner, it's voluntary. And, of course, I realized in the middle, about time, halfway down from 20,000 feet, diving into the middle of a Jap carrier, you can't say, excuse me, but I just decided to unvolunteer and I want to leave. You
time
can't,
out, time
yeah,
out.
Yeah, right. You can't do that. But anyway, you are voluntary, and they know. So they appreciate the fact that you stay with it day after day, week after week. And there's a lot of boring flights out there, way out. You drive fly 200 miles out there on one leg, on one search hop, and then you drive fly 100 miles across there to the next. Then you come back to the ship 200 miles. So you haven't seen a thing except water. And, of course, a lot of guys, they don't care about it. But it's kind of fun, but it can be very boring, and but it makes you really feel good when you get them, and you can wear the badge and the battle ribbons, and you got a DFC in there, and then of course later on they came up with the combat aircrew wings, and they are not exactly the same as flying, but it shows that you got, it's like a combat infantryman badge. Nobody can wear a combat infantryman badge unless you've been in combat, and you got to earn it. And
right.
So it gives you the feeling like, hey, I earned it, and this shows it. So it's a good feeling.
Well, we know that you earned it. And I still got a couple more questions for you. So we'll come back with more with Don Hoff next on Hometown Heroes here on News Talk 580 KMJ.
You've heard.
This is Hometown Heroes. Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes here on News Talk 580 KMJ. You know, my plan was to have Don Hoff on for one edition of this program, but there's just so much good material that we're moving on to the second program. You've heard some more on this edition already, and I'm not quite done with Don yet. Here's a question for you, Don. We talked about you serving on the Big E, the USS Enterprise, and that was the subject of an ongoing History Channel series, Battle 360, in which you were interviewed and featured, and you look good on TV, I might add. Let me ask you this. If you're ever around town, and you and your wife Elsie spent a long time calling square dances all over the place, people see you with something that says USS Enterprise. How many Star Trek references do you end up getting? And does that bother you when people think you're a Trekkie because you have the USS Enterprise?
It does not bother me. It's usually the younger people, because the younger people who grew up with Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched some of their sessions, and of course they're so different, but it's kind of fun. And then, but it's also an opportunity when somebody says, "Oh, Enterprise, Star Trek Enterprise." I say, "Well, not exactly. Mine was an old aircraft carrier during World War II," and they'll say, "World War II? What? When was that? What's an aircraft carrier?" Well, then they've asked a question, and it gives you an opportunity to tell them, to explain some of the things that they probably have never heard of or don't know. And so I'm always willing to give them other information that I can on the thing, because I think a lot of times, of course, they have aircraft carriers right now in the Navy. But it's a whole different world. Though they got jet planes, and they got females out there flying the jet fighters and helicopters and all that stuff. But I once in a while, it kind of tickles me. I think to myself, how nice it would have been if Commander McCluskey would have picked up his little cell phone and said to the skipper, "Skipper, we're out here at this location, and there's nothing here. Have you got a suggestion, or can you check the satellite, give us a position report? Can you come up with something that we can fly to?" And I mean, how handy that would have been. But it's radio silence, absolute radio silence. And I've heard stories, I've heard other people talk about, "Oh boy, all the communication that was going on between them." It's sure funny I didn't hear any of it.
And you're a radio man.
And our other radio man, they didn't hear about it either. Now, the fighters themselves, they had VHF.
Right.
And which is line of sight. So they could talk back and forth. They could. They had the communication. But we didn't have that. And ours was strictly absolute no communication. The only thing was that the air group commander said to the other two pilots, to the commanding officers, he said, "Earl, you take you and I'll take the one on the left, and Dick, you take the one on the right," or whichever it was. By the way, there was almost a mid-air or several mid-air collisions, because when he told Dick to take the one on the right, he didn't see the one on the right. He saw the one on the left, and he thought that was the one he was supposed to go after. So he's got his squadron coming after that one, and we got our squadron and the one on the left, and that happens to be the same one. So we got two air groups flying from two different angles, coming down, diving on the same carrier, jet carrier. And believe me, it was almost a mid-air collision. And, of course, everybody got a bomb on, and a bomb could have, at that elevation, they could have really wiped out half or all of the squadron. But
right up there with the bullets squeezing their way through the three blades of the propeller.
Oh, yeah. And that would have, a 1,000-pound bomb up in that elevation, that would have, that would have created quite a problem. But they got it straightened out. He got it straightened out, and But those are confusion things that that do happen. It's not something that you plan. You don't like it that way. But the next day, that was, now we were talking about the first day of the battle. Anyway, we're
right.
all so far. We're just talking about June the 4th. June the 5th, we made a search hop that turned out to be fruitless. June the 7th, we, I'm sorry, the 5th was the fruitless day. June the 6th, we went out, we went after two battle cruisers, the Mogami and her sister ship, the Makuma. And we got out there and we just absolutely shredded it. That bomb was just, that ship was just torn to pieces. And we got a direct hit on it. And that photograph that they took of it, they had a regular United Press photographer that came along and he photographed it. And that became one of the best known pictures of World War II. It shows a cruiser. He is just, the water is full of people that are in there. And there's a torpedo hanging out, the torpedo thing. And I mean, it's hanging there. You look and you see, holy mackerel. Yeah, it has all been torn apart.
And that was the result of your
our
plan's
attack.
Direct
right.
hit.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And our attacks, we had, there again, we had our two air groups, and two squadrons. And there is a, but we did that, and that was a big hit to destroy a battle cruiser like that, and which, of course, then we started heading north because the Japanese had hit the Aleutians up there, hit Alaska, and that's where we were going because we thought, well, we killed four of them down here, we can sure kill them two more up there, but it got foggy and it got cold. And the fog moved in there, and we couldn't go anywhere. We couldn't even operate planes, and you couldn't even see them. They had to use the radar to tell where the ships were. And some of them got confused in the mix-up, so they finally said, forget it. And they turned around and they went back to Pearl Harbor, for which I was very thankful. Nobody was unhappy at all.
You've described a lot of close calls for us. Which makes me wonder, what would you say, and I bet you've been asked this before, what would you say was your closest call during the war? What do you think was the moment that you came the closest to not being here to tell me all about this today?
Well, at the first day, at June the 4th, after we pulled out of that first dive, we were heading southward, and there was a big Japanese cruiser, a big 8-inch rifles, their biggest shell, and they started shooting into the water. They would shoot out ahead of our plane, and of course we were going as fast as we could go, full speed, and we were low in the water, and they would shoot, and the shell would land in the water, and when it did, it would throw off a big column of water, and of course, fortunately, my pilot, Mr. Dexter, could avoid it. He did avoid it. He had to turn left and right and climb, and he was what they call jinxing. He was he'd go fast climb up and then down. He'd dive and move left and right. The idea is to make a very difficult target for the gunner. But when they started throwing these shells out there, and they blew up these columns of water, if you run into one of them, it's like running into a concrete wall.
Mm-hmm.
Water at 250 miles an hour is real hard. And so one of those, we were flying along, and he was going just as hard as we could. And one of those hit in the water right below us. And at the speed we were moving, if we had been probably a quarter to a half second later than what we were, we would have hit that column the way it was. It exploded right in the water, right underneath us, and it lifted us right straight up about 50 feet. Now, it didn't hit us, but the concussion lifted us right straight up in the air about 50 feet, and, of course, we were going full speed. We moved on, but it's that sudden blast that had we been a half a second, a quarter a second later, We would have hit that thing, and because it would have come up so fast right in front of us, we wouldn't have had any chance to avoid it. We did avoid, we zigged and zagged and up and down, and we did avoid everything so far. But
and I bet you had a few occasions with Dexter, your pilot, to thank him for that. Or was that something that did not need to be said?
Well, I thank you. You better believe it. Even though I realize that's his job, is to, but still, I sure appreciate it. But the funny thing is, Paul, interesting, your combat teams, your pilot and your gunner, they work together as a team because the pilot's looking forward, but he depends on the gunner in the back there to protect him. And when they work together, if the pilot doesn't like the gunner or the gunner doesn't really like the pilot, they usually don't put them together because you've got to have somebody that's compatible. Mm-hmm. You've got to work together. I had never flown with Mr. Dexter. I had never been in that plane. We made all four attacks at Midway. We never got a scratch. We never had a shell hole. No shrapnel. The worst thing was we had 5 gallons of gas when we ended up back at the ship, and the granted the battery on the plane did go dead because of a loose connection between the generator and the battery, but then that's not something it's you can't help it. But all of that protection, and I've always felt that there was an envelope of protection around me that just is there.
Well, you make a pretty good case for that with all these stories that you're sharing from your experiences. And I know we haven't even scratched the surface of that. You tired of talking, or you got a few more minutes?
No, that's fine.
All right. We'll come back with more with World War II veteran Don Hoff here on Hometown Heroes, News Talk 580 KMJ.
Mercy. On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Lettler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes here on News Talk 580 KMJ. We continue with World War II veteran Don Hoff, who's had so many good stories for you. We had to make two programs out of this visit with him. He talked about being in the air when the Pearl Harbor attack happened. He had been stationed on the USS Enterprise as part of Scouting Squadron 6. He remained with that squadron and participated in the Battle of Midway, earning a Distinguished Flying Cross for his efforts there as a radio man and gunner, sitting backwards in one of those two-man SBD dive bombers that were so prolific at the Battle of Midway. And I know since then, obviously you had more experiences in the war. You would serve at Guadalcanal, and that was one of the more storied battles of World War II. Since the war ended, I know that you've been involved in getting guys together and getting these reunions going and meeting up with people. You made reference earlier to talking to young people, and sometimes they think the USS Enterprise is Star Trek, and that gives you an opportunity to share some of this history and educate them a little bit. That's what this program's all about, is educating us, us young backwards, to surface those man, and to talk dive bomb that were all right, terrific at the back with more Midway, with a man veteran since then off here. You had more heroes, new in the war,
mentor,
serve it, and that well, and that of the more battles of
that's right.
Two.
Mm-hmm.
And since the ended, you've been educated and
mentor
guys, and that getting these reunions going, meeting up with made reference, talking to
you,
and sometimes USS Star Trek gives you an opportunity to share some of the and educate
shows
a little bit.
Shows
that's what this show's all about, is it shows in us,
shows
backwards,
shows
those
shows
man,
and shows
dive bomb
shows
that were
shows
epic at the shows Midway
hooked up with a
and
hooked up with a
since then
hooked up with a
you had more
hooked up with a
in the war
hooked up with a
serve it
hooked up with a
hell in that
hooked up with a
the more
hooked up with a
battles of
hooked up with a
two
hooked up with a
since
hooked up with a
ended you've been then guys to getting these going meeting up with made reference talking to you and sometimes USS
Sister
Star Trek
Sister
you and opera
Sister
share some of
Sister
and educate
Sister
a little bit
Sister
that's what this
Sister
all about is
Sister
in us
Sister
backwards
Sister
those
Sister
man S
I'm
dive bar
I'm
that we're
I'm
terrific at the
I'm
Midway
I'm
and
I'm
since then
I'm
you had more
I'm
in the war
I'm
serve it
I'm
hell in that
I'm
the more battles of two since then did you've been the guys to getting these going, meeting up. We made reference talking to you and sometimes USS and Star Trek. You and Opera share some of the and educate a little bit. That's what this is all about, is in us backwards, those man S dive bombs that were terrific at the Midway. And since then, you had more in the war of it well, and that with the more battles of now guys to get cut out in these reunions cut out going and cut out meeting up and cut out made reference and cut out talking to you and cut out and sometimes and cut out USS and cut out Star Trek and cut out you and offer and cut share some mercy and educate us a little bit mercy that's what this is all about is mercy us backwards those man dive bombs that were we were epic at the chance we were midway chance we and chance we since then chance we had more chance we was in the war chance we were it chance we well in that chance we the more chance we battles of chance and I've two chance and I've since the and I've did and I've you've been and I've been and I've guys to and I've been these reads and I'm going and I'm meeting up with and I've made reference and I'm talking to you and sometimes you USS and you Star Trek you and operate you share some of that you and educate you a little bit you that's what this you all about is you being us you backwards those combo man as combo dive bomb combo that were combo epic at the combo midway combo and combo since then combo you had more combo is in the war combo serve it combo hell in that MJ the more MJ battles of MJ 2 MJ since the MJ ended MJ you've been MJ than MJ guys to MJ getting these re-MJ going program meeting up program made reference program talking to your program and sometimes program USS program Star Trek program you and our program share some program and educate program a little bit program that's what this quadrant all about is quadrating us quadrant backwards quadrant those quadrant man s quadrant dive bomb quadrant that were quadrific at the quadrant midway quadrant and quadrant since then speedy so you had more speedy is in the war speedy serve it speedy hell in that speedy the more speedy battles of speedy 2 speedy since the speedy ended speedy you've been more story than more story guys to more story getting these more story going more story meeting up more story made reference more story talking to your story and sometimes more story USS more story Star Trek more story you and opera unions share some
now more hometown heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
About time going by fast. We wrap up our second program here with World War II veteran Don Hoff, a Navy man who served his time mostly in the air, at least the more entertaining and intense moments in dive bombers in the Pacific during World War II. You've heard him talk about that. And before we went to that break, I asked him who his heroes were, if there are people that he served with or served under during World War II. He's had a few minutes to think about that. So now, Don, we're ready for your answer. Who was your hero during the war?
Well, during the war, my heroes were anybody that in the squadron that we flew with. Pilots and gunners and mechanics and ordnancemen, people that maintained the plane. Those guys were my heroes because my life, you might say my life depended on me. They did their job, and they do their job right, and I would come out of it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's one of them mess up things, and you could end up floating around in the water out there 5,000 miles from nowhere and wondering if there's somebody going to pick you up, and a lot of guys did. But heroes, to me, that's kind of a... we call them heroes.
I know that World War II veterans in general always tell me, to me, the real heroes were the guys who didn't come home. And I understand that. And that, to me, I feel the same way. Those are the ultimate heroes. But I think we can still look at other people that we know that did make it home that maybe inspired us or made us say, I want to be more like that guy.
Well, yeah, but there's also some guys that... you wouldn't necessarily want to be like them, but they just are. Now, let me give you a different idea.
Sure.
Of my heroes.
Yeah.
One of my heroes is a guy by the name of Lloyd Childers, and he was a radioman gunner in the backseat of a torpedo bomber that flew off of the Yorktown on the morning of June the 4th. Mm-hmm. And there was about 15 of them took off from there, the Yorktown, and two of them made it back to the ship. And one of them, the gunner, was dead. They were these were these torpedo bombers built by Douglas. They're called Devastators. And about the only thing those Devastators ever did, they devastated the personnel in a squadron because they never hit anything with them. And all they did was to kill the guys that were in them, and they got lost and shot down. They killed everybody from the skipper right on down. But there were two pilots... There were two planes, and there was two pilots and one gunner that survived. And the gunner, the Lloyd Childers, was a survivor. He was badly injured. He was wounded badly. He recovered. He got into the hospital. Ensign George Gay, who was the sole survivor of the torpedo squadron off of the Hornet that flew over there, and he was the sole survivor. They got together over in the hospital, and George Gay brought him every day. He was there visiting with him, and he said, anything you need, I will get for you. So, well, when Lloyd recovered, they asked him what he wanted to do, and he said, well, he didn't have anything right at the point. He was third-class radioman, and they'd made him, by that time, he'd made him a second class. And they said, well, how about going to flight school? Would you like to go to flight school? Yeah, he thought that'd be a pretty good idea. He went through flight school. When he graduated, they offered him a commission as an ensign or as a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps. Well, since he'd been Navy and he knew officers and he knew what it was like with carriers, he said, well, I think maybe I'll become a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps. I think they get more respect from the enlisted men. And so he took it. All right, he finished out World War II as a second lieutenant. He went in Korea, and he stayed in for 30 years, and he put in over 300 missions in Vietnam as a helicopter pilot.
Holy cow.
And in evacuation helicopters. And he retired out of there as a lieutenant colonel, and he then got into education. He became a teacher and a principal. He retired finally as the superintendent of schools. I think it was Contra Costa County up there. He lives up in Walnut Creek. And there, in that opinion, that guy is a real genuine hero. Then you got...
Sounds like someone I ought to have on the program sometime.
Yeah. And, of course, you'd have to go get him. He's a great guy, a real gentleman. And he's not loud and boisterous like me. You get a square dance caller. They used to be on the microphone, and they used to tell everybody what to do. Do this, do that, go here, go that, go forward. That's the way they are.
Well, some of our listeners might remember you from another part of your life, too. You might have paid a visit to their home or
seen
them at a crime scene or seen them in court or something.
Well,
how many years did you put in with Fresno County Sheriff's?
I put 23 years in the Fresno Sheriff's Department, and they came up, and things were, that was okay. Everything was paid for at home, and the wife was working, and so we decided that I would retire and that we'd travel, and we'd go all over the place. Well, we retired, and then the crunch hit, and so we didn't travel anywhere, and got into square dance calling, and got to dancing first, and we danced all over the place, and we got to calling, and had a lot of fun calling, and put a lot of people in the square dance activity, and we really enjoyed it, and finally our health gave out a couple of years ago, and we just had to give it up, so...
Sounds to me like a lot of lives were touched because Dexter was able to pull up just in time on that first dive bombing run in Midway.
Yeah, and you know, getting back to Dexter just for a quick one, after Midway was over, and our squadron, what was left of our squadron, went over to Canio Naval Air Station, reformed, they got new pilots and new gunners. We went back on this in November, we went on board with Saratoga.
Right.
All right. Then... Dexter was, he stayed on the Enterprise. They put him over in Bombing Squadron 6. And he was, periodically, the fighter pilots have to have some practice shooting at a target. And so they have an SBD that lets out the target.
Right.
And tows the target.
Right.
Well, he was along about in, sometime around July the 5th or 3rd or 4th, somewhere along in there. They were out heading for Guadalcanal. And he was towing the target. And when they finished with the target, when they finished where the gunnery runs, well, the fighters regrouped, and they came on back to the carrier. They landed, and they said, they come into the ready room, and they said, well, where's Dexter? I don't know. We fly about faster than him. He's out there coming in, I guess. And they said, no, he isn't. He's not coming in. Well, now, wait a minute. We left him out there wherever it was. Well, the thing is, he was heading in exactly the opposite direction from the ship where they had been. He was 180 degrees. He was going in the opposite direction. There's no reference points out there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Plain ocean.
We got about a minute left in the program.
All right. He was heading out there, and he kept flying. Never recovered him again.
Oh.
Just disappeared. He and his gunner both. The gunner had been to two or three attacks at Midway, so he was an experienced gunner, but they just disappeared. So to me, that he was one of my real best heroes of all.
And another example of it could have been you. And we're so glad that it wasn't. I know your wife Elsie's glad that it wasn't.
Well, I'll tell you, I would have flown anywhere with that man after four attacks at Midway. I would have flown any place. I'm glad I didn't, but I would have.
And if I knew how to fly, I'd fly anywhere with you in the back seat, because obviously someone was looking out for it, and you're a very blessed man.
Thank you. I am very blessed.
Well, and we're blessed to have you here. Thank you so much for your service to our country, Don. Thanks for being here today. And unfortunately, we're out of time on this edition of Hometown Heroes. It's been a great pleasure hearing these stories. I hope that you'll look forward to more next week. And remember, you can always download the podcast version of Hometown Heroes at KMJ580.com. That's it for today. I'm Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.